This is one of my favorite suttas, which offers advice on meditating. And this is one of those suttas where, like, it just gives general advice. Most of the suttas which are taught by monks to lay people, or monks to monks, they love to pick suttas with a lot of details, if possible. They like the fine details. This one's just kind of general. You got to work with this yourself. It's these general ones I find myself keep returning back to and asking, okay, like, how do I apply this? And it gives me room to think, room to explore, room to experiment. When you're a Westerner, you love this creativity. If your creative energies don't get involved, it feels annoying. It's like, well, don't just tell me what to do. Let me find out for myself. Let me try it. Anyway, that's just kind of a Westerner thing. Okay, so Anguttara Nikaya 3's Sutta 102, a goldsmith. Now, this title goldsmith is Bhikkhu Bodhi's title for it. It actually doesn't match to the Pali at all for this title, but it's a reasonable title. Bhikkhus, when a bhikkhu is devoted to the higher mind, from time to time, he should give attention to three marks. The Pali here is nimitta, marks, like signs. Nimitta just means like sign or indicator or mark. It's a general term, nimitta. He should give attention to three marks. From time to time, he should give attention to the mark of concentration. From time to time, the mark of exertion. And from time to time, the mark of equanimity. If a bhikkhu devoted to the higher mind attends exclusively to the mark of concentration, it is possible that his mind will veer towards laziness. If he attends exclusively to the mark of exertion, it's possible that his mind will veer toward restlessness. If he attends exclusively to the mark of equanimity, it is possible that his mind will not be properly concentrated for the destruction of the taints. But when a bhikkhu devoted to the higher mind from time to time gives attention to the mark of concentration, from time to time the mark of exertion, and from time to time the mark of equanimity, his mind becomes malleable. Malleable means like can be shaped like clay. Imagine clay, you can crush it and shape it. That's malleable. His mind becomes malleable. Wieldly. Okay, wieldly means like can be used skillfully. Like maybe think of a baseball player. He can very skillfully swing the baseball bat and hit the ball and hit a home run. So he can wield the baseball bat. He's good at that. Okay, so the mind becomes wieldly. And luminous, pliant and properly concentrated for the destruction of the taints. Suppose, bhikkhus, a goldsmith or his apprentice would prepare a furnace, heat up the crucible. So a crucible is kind of like, think of a wok where you aren't stirring vegetables, but rather you're going to make some gold in there. It's like a gold wok. Okay, heat up the crucible. Take some gold with tongs and put it into the crucible. Then from time to time, he would blow on it. From time to time, sprinkle water over it. And from time to time, just look on. If the goldsmith or his apprentice were to exclusively blow on the gold, it is possible that the gold would just burn up. If he were to exclusively sprinkle water on the gold, it's possible the gold would cool down. If he were exclusively to just look on, it is possible the gold would not reach the right consistency. But if the goldsmith or his apprentice from time to time blows on it, from time to time sprinkles water over it, and from time to time just looks on, the gold would become malleable, wieldly, and luminous, pliant and properly fit for work. then whatever kind of ornament the goldsmith wishes to make from it, whether a bracelet, earrings, a necklace, or a golden garland. So a garland would be like a thick rope, but it's very beautiful looking. And I guess he's suggesting where it's wrapped around the body. It's not just dangled around the neck. If a woman had a nice waist, she would show off her waist by wrapping this around her waist. Okay. A garland. Golden garland. Okay. He can achieve his purpose. So too, when a bhikkhu is devoted to the higher mind, from time to time, he should give attention to three marks. From time to time, he should give attention to the mark of concentration. From time to time to the mark of exertion, and from time to time to the mark of equanimity. If a bhikkhu devoted to the higher mind attends exclusively to the mark of concentration, it is possible that his mind will veer towards laziness. If he attends exclusively to the mark of exertion, it is possible that his mind will veer toward restlessness. If he attends exclusively to the mark of equanimity, it is possible that his mind will not be properly concentrated for the destruction of the taints. But when, from time to time, he gives attention to the mark of concentration, etc., etc., same thing repeated, then, there being a suitable basis, he is capable of realizing any state realizable by direct knowledge toward which he might incline his mind. Okay, wow. This just got real interesting. So if this is done right, he is capable of realizing any state realizable by direct knowledge toward which he might incline his mind. If he wishes, may I wield the various kinds of psychic potency. And then there's a list of the different kinds of psychic power that can be all listed here. Okay, psychic potency, having been one. Okay, here's what the monk might wish for. Having been one, may I become many. Like clones of yourself, you know, duplicate bodies kind of thing. Having been many, may I become one. May I appear and vanish, you know, like disappear and reappear. May I go unhindered through a wall, through a rampart, through a mountain, as though through space. May I dive in and out of the earth as though it were water. May I walk on water without sinking as though it were earth. Seated cross-legged, may I travel in space like a bird. With my hand, may I touch and stroke the moon and sun, so powerful and mighty. May I exercise mastery of the body as far as the Brahma world. He is capable of realizing it, there being a suitable basis. Wow, this just goes on and on. If you go one sutta earlier, this is all listed. There's a whole another page and a half of these psychic powers. I suggest if you're curious what those are, that was in Anguttara Nikaya 3.101. Okay, so I'm reading from 102, and then there's a reference here. Just fill in the whole list from 101. Just go back one sutta. Okay, so after having all these psychic powers developed from doing this goldsmith thing, then he might wish, may I, with the destruction of the taints in this very life, realize for myself with direct knowledge the taintless liberation of mind, liberation by wisdom, and having entered upon it, may I dwell in it. He is capable of realizing it, there being a suitable basis. Okay, so that's Nibbana. So monks and nuns, of course, we ordain not for psychic powers, but to attain Nibbana. Now, if they're lucky, if they're fortunate, if they're skillful, they can also get psychic powers. It's like a bonus, you know? The Buddha calls it an adornment, an adornment. So it's sort of like, this is an extra medal of honor if you can get it. It's a decoration. It's like a trophy. But that's not the whole point of this. The point is Nibbana. Okay, so that's cool. That's very inspiring. And suttas like this, like I've read this sutta many times over, and over many years too. The first time I read this sutta must have been 10, 12 years ago. And I cannot help but appreciate it more and more over time, because this is how it ends up working over the long term. At least in my experience, this has held true, where There is no one object of meditation that I can just always do morning to night, every day, every week, every month, every year. No, I have to be willing to change up my approach now and again. I have to be flexible. I have to, you know, just as this sutta is talking about, one can work on samadhi, one can work on exertion, and one can work on equanimity. And if one is not flexible, one will suffer for that. One can veer to laziness or restlessness or just not destroy the taints. Okay? It's possible, interestingly, to have samadhi, but then not destroy the taints. That's interesting. Some monks might say, oh, if you get samadhi, just keep doing that, and nibbana is a sure thing. Well, it is generally true that that tremendously helps, but it is possible to develop lots of samadhi and still not attain nibbana if one does not destroy the taints further. Anyway, so suttas like this provide some extra, shall we say, like dynamics around this. It's a little bit more like an art sometimes, not so much like a science. It's kind of both. It's both a science and an art. There are definite patterns. There are definite techniques which are clearly described and straightforward to follow. So in that sense, it's like a science. Science wants everything to be like that. Very exact, very straightforward, very clear. You can measure it to the nearest millimeter. Science loves that. But sometimes it's like an art. It's like, well, you got to know what you're doing, though. You got to steer your boat, as it were. Now, there aren't really goldsmiths to be seen easily anymore, but maybe here in Taiping or Penang or something, they have like a glass blowing art shop. Do they have that here? Langkawi. Oh, okay. Yeah, well, if you've never been to one of these, there's going to be YouTube videos and stuff of this, but if you look at people doing glass blowing, that's very much kind of like a science and an art. There's a lot you have to know about glass blowing so you don't burn yourself, smash the glass on the floor or whatever. Like, there's a lot to know. There's different materials you use and techniques. But then when you see them do this, you see them kind of like making their glass sculpture. There's an art to it. There's a technique. They have to be smooth with their movement. There's a lot of creativity too. Like, how do they combine the different colors and stuff? And what do they want to make out of this? You know, it's actually like, if you see really skilled glass blowers, it's actually really amazing. Like, they can make some really amazing things. So anyway, I would suggest glass blowing might be the modern goldsmith thing, eh? I'm sure there's still goldsmiths, but I've never been on a tour of a goldsmith's operation before, but I have been on a glass blowing tour back in Canada. Okay, anyway, I'll just end it here. And yeah, I'm just going to leave with you that, like, this is kind of both a science and an art, okay? And when I oftentimes meet monks who are a little bit too assumptive. No, it's just a science. There's no art here. You know, I'm like, that doesn't resonate. Suttas like this can't be dismissed. That's been my experience. Okay, thanks.